There's a very different level when you compare the US to Europe.
Totally. And I think that's the thing is, I mean, we have to look at the facts, right? You know, what's happening in the US and even what's happening in China. And we've seen a lot of capital going into those markets. Europe has not had a similar amount of capital going through. So just to give some statistics, you know, the industry itself is a $4.7 trillion industry, financial services, massive. That's why people are here and we're looking at changing it. And there's a lot we can do in terms of savings, both on time and capital in terms of how it's run. But in Europe, you know, the first quarter of this year, you know, $350 million was invested in European fintech, right? So it's not a big number. On a yearly basis, it's $1.5 billion last year. And then you compare that to the United States, and there's $1.8 billion that went into fintech in the first quarter, and about $8 billion in total went into the fintech sector. So we're in a very different place. And then for me, you know, are we saying then that the US is a bigger opportunity than Europe? And I fundamentally believe that Europe has the opportunity to build something really unique. You know, there's 50 states in the US, and you have to go state by state by state. In Europe, we have passporting. We're actually, regulatory-wise, there's a lot less red tape. In terms of competency, London is an international financial center. You know, it has a global outlook. That's why it's won in so many years. So I think, you know, if you take it into that perspective, yes, we're having a softening. I think that's good. That's good for the industry. But, you know, I don't think we had the hefty sort of valuations that were coming through in the U.S. and absolutely coming through in China.
Okay. David, you've seen a few cycles in your time. How do you, sitting in San Francisco, when you look at a global sort of landscape, investing in fintech, what sort of areas do you think really have that long opportunity ahead of them, and where do you think there might be a little bit of overheating at the moment?
Sure. I think to take a line from The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. Depends which side of the divide you're on. I think innovation has never been better. There's never been better opportunity. You have low-cost platforms on which to build. You have the cloud infrastructure. You have the ability to reach billions of people through smartphones and social media, et cetera, and big data unleashing its power with smart algorithms. That is here to stay and going to be your friend as entrepreneurs. The other side, I'd say, worst of times, it's the regulatory juggernaut that is coming toward everybody, I think mostly in a bad way. There's some aspects of regulation that are good, but I think it's going to be an enemy to many of you going forward, and taxation goes along with that. The divide between U.S. and Europe, we don't see that much because we invest in both places, so I think that balances us. I agree with you that there's a lot of benefits to the PSD that allows for passporting. That's a marvelous thing. Europe historically was burdened by lots of different small countries, and the passporting helps solve a lot of that.
And the U.S. is burdened by every state, right? You have to be regulated in every single state, which is, you know, 50 states, it's hard work, right? And so actually when we speak to American entrepreneurs, some of them actually get pretty excited about Europe.
But what I was going to say is that you're talking, I think, more about the lending side of things.
Yes.
On the tech side is where I think it's a little bit easier. It's less subject to those burdens and the regulatory scrutiny. And again, if you go away from the consumer lending, that's where the worst of the regulatory scrutiny is. If you go to SMB lending, much easier and still fertile market in the U.S. and abroad. And anything in the B2B, trying to help banks be more efficient and take advantage of 21st century technology, big opportunities ahead.
Right.
Yeah, and also on the lending side of things, you know, yes, it is a point that you have to be licensed to be lending in each one of the states or to be able to or have to get the money transmitter licenses. However, in many cases, you could get those simply from the likes of WebBank. Or I think there's also something called like cross-river.
Yeah, but if you didn't have those problems at all, it becomes easier.
You mean, sure.
If you only need to do it once rather than 50 times, you know, it's just easier. So that's why I think Europe, and you know, like I said, I think actually there's a lot of smart people who've been working. You know, like London has both great technologists and a lot of good sophisticated capital within financial services. So I still believe that it's early days, and we haven't really had the ability to make use of it, which is exactly what you're saying. I mean, I think you know, the exciting thing is that fintech, the opportunity is huge. I mean, we spoke about it just as on the other side here, you know, when you opened your first bank account 2 years ago in the UK, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, I forgot my PIN and I needed to send in some identification and they would only accept a fax.
Yeah.
Or I had to go into the branch myself, which is...
That's 2 years ago.
Yeah, two years ago.
Get a fax, right? Yeah. And you know, none of us had have a fax today. I don't even know where to find a fax. I think I have to go somewhere to find a fax that's been buried somewhere. So I mean, I think that the reality is that the ability to create massive efficiencies in this sector are enormous. The databases are sitting in silos, much of them within big financial institutions. If they're able to work across the institutions, I think a lot of money will be saved. And then there's disintermediation. I mean, there's lots of layering and layering. We're shuffling around pieces of paper, and actually it's not required. Those middlemen are not required. And that data actually can be saved and reused for creating mortgages for the next time or creating a bank account the next time. We don't need to be starting from sort of fundamentals every time.
Yeah. David.
Another area that has not really been mentioned, you've sort of talked Europe and I've talked broadly, and I think you invest all over as well. But an area that I haven't mentioned really is the developing world, which has been growing at a much faster pace economically than either Europe, Japan, or the United States. They seem to be growing at 5, 6, 7%. We've been growing at 2% if we're lucky for the last 20 years. And a lot of those people are very, very underbanked and they have a lot of needs for financial services. So I think there's enormous opportunity, again, riding on these new lightweight, low-cost platforms to address the needs of billions of people that have no options or very inadequate options right now. We take it for granted, and a lot of them are really just struggling for something that would be what we would consider minimal viable product here might be excellent there.
But even here in Europe, you know, you have a lot of people that are struggling with being banked, and there's people finding solutions to that. And it's a sector that the traditional bankers don't even bother with. And I think that's basically, I mean, really where the innovation's starting is where the banking industry has decided not to spend time. And that's always a good place to start. But where it really gets exciting, and I don't know how long that's going to take, is when we're going after more and more into the core. And I think that has yet to come. I mean, that hasn't really happened yet.
Right. Just want to flip it around to sort of, when we talk about a bubble, we have to look at where the money is coming from, where the funding is coming from. Where in this, you know, most of the Western world, low interest rates, doesn't look like they're going to go up anytime soon. I don't want to make forecasts here, but it seems that way. Are there things that, I mean, is there a bubble, in fact, on the funding side of things, where there's too much capital chasing opportunities and hence sort of investing in things that are not fully formed yet? Oscar, from your...
Well, I think sitting in Tokyo, although I guess like three quarters of our portfolio are in the U.S. and one quarter in Europe, and you know, similar to David, we do look at things very much on a global basis. So it's not even so much, I guess, like geography dependent, but definitely opportunity dependent and also reliant on the great technology you might find, whether that's in Europe, in America, in China. I mean, the Chinese have been extremely creative for certain things. It's almost, the traditional premises of investment, finding, the right technology, the right team, the market, and so forth. What I would say abounds is plenty of companies trying to do very much everything at the same time. And I think, those are probably like the worst, where they start with one idea, right? But in reality, it's just like so long tail that it's very difficult to put a valuation on it. And frankly, when you truly push the buttons, they will tell you that they want to do something else. A lot of it, effectively trying just to accumulate subscribers or users,
right,
but effectively buying revenues all the way along.
All right.
I think, if I may, about the pricing of bubble and all that, I think the most important thing for entrepreneurs, which most of you are, is to remember is live to fight another day. Don't fight to the last dime on valuation. That's going to be a losing battle in this part of the economy cycle. Fight on terms that are more favorable to you as entrepreneurs. You know, be wary of the dirty term sheets that have all kinds of structure provisions on them. That can divide interest between founders, early stage investors, and the late stage investors. So I would urge you to try and keep things clean. And if you have to compromise on value, on pricing, because ultimately the goal for you and for us is to grow a very large, successful entity at the end. And I think it's a normal regression to mean in terms of what's happened in valuation. There was an imbalance of supply and demand, I think, particularly in the U.S., particularly in Silicon Valley, particularly with investors from the public markets that came into late-stage private companies. And that's reversed now. The flood tide in became the flood tide out. But don't lose focus on what you need to do, which is to build a great company. Get yourselves funded.
Matthias, then in that case, in your experience, when you go and evaluate what comes to you, are there things that would not have gotten funded in a more normal interest rate environment where you don't have to pay governments to lend them money? If that changes in the next 2-3 years, is there stuff that is coming to your table that just wouldn't make it there?
I think it's again, I think you're talking about if we're going to have a fundamental change in the interest rate environment. And I think, yes, we're in a unique era, maybe in history, at least that's what we think, right? And so will these new models that are, you know, a lot of them working on have only worked in an environment with low interest rates, will they be able to be just as successful in a high interest rate environment? And I think they haven't been tested, right? So we don't know. And I think we would be silly to say, yes, of course they're going to work, it's going to be no problem. But having said that, you know, I think they are set up to be, you know, really interesting companies, even those environments, because they're regulatory, a little bit more regulatory light. They don't have as much infrastructure. So, you know, banks today and other companies, you know, they have lots of offices and retail outlets and so on and so forth. And the new entities are much more light-footed, being able to be nimble and change. And then they're using data in a smart way, right? So they're able to make assessments quicker and faster. And you know, you're talking about looking at the developing world, you know, and I think there, again, the issue is it's hard giving them credit and understanding how to rate these people. And I think, actually, the whole world of providing new and efficient means of credit rating will be really interesting. And this is an ability even for the traditional industry to maybe make use of the experience and the knowledge and the technology built through machine learning and AI in terms of evaluating each, whether it's a company or an individual.
Sure. David, you had a point.
A couple of points. One, in terms of the underserved, even in Europe, here we are in Madrid, and I was told, maybe my data wrong, but they're, I think, approximate, that even in Spain today, only 16% of adults have a credit score, and it's only negative. there aren't positive credit scores. Like, you don't get benefit for like paying your bills on time, which is something we take for granted. And is that true? A Spanish lady is saying yes. So that's you know, it's amazing underserving of the market. We have not solved all the problems yet. The second point I want to make is about low interest rates. I think even cavemen paid higher, and women paid higher interest rates than we pay today. So historically, you're right. And I don't think it's a good thing. It's particularly not a good thing for startups. Don't let the politicians fool you. This is a subsidy to big companies, and it's a penalty to startups. It's not a good situation,
okay, my view. In this environment then that you guys have laid out, what are the focus areas for you then, Oscar, right now? In the next 12 months to 5 years, what do you think is going to... Where are you focusing your time and attention then?
Well, definitely, you know, any company that's relying on new ways of slicing and dicing big data is something of interest, right? Whether, you know, you want to apply it to lending, payments, asset management. Well, I mean, the blockchain itself, I guess it's a way of looking at distribution or big data. But all those models that will bring efficiency to the marketplace, and not necessarily consumer models that, as I was saying before, are heavily subsidized and are going to be struggling to make it to the top, but precisely those companies that might substitute or improve the way the way banks are doing things.
Sure. Matthias?
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly, I think data is always, we've all said it maybe 100 times, and that's a really interesting area. But I think, you know, if we divide it up into another way of, like, I do believe that, you know, lending will continue to evolve and there'll be new areas. Insurance, tech, another area that's really interesting. Again, asset management. I don't find anything that's been really compelling there that's going on. There's been a few really interesting companies, but I think there's more that can be done there. You know, again, we mentioned credit scoring. I think that will be really interesting. And then there might be an interesting evolution where, you know, you have the TransferWise or the you know, the new type of banks, and maybe like a whatever, a and they come together and they actually create a full platform. But at the moment, they're very, very narrow in what they're providing. And what could be interesting, actually, these entities working more closely together to provide a full service, so you don't have to go to 10 different places right. to do a service that could be all done at one place.
Right. David, any thoughts on that? Or what I would like to hear from you is,
your question.
What do you stay away from now?
Okay. I think that obvious things, we do early stage, so we're trying to stay away from seed and A rounds, typically a few hundred thousand to a few million. And so we're trying to stay away from things that are too overly populated. So for example, the P2P lending space, consumer folks would be very busy area, certain areas in payments, a lot of the latest apps kind of thing tend to leave us cold. We're looking for things more AI, more deep learning, more machine learning, really complicated understanding of technology that gives you some proprietary edge over the long term. And it's not subject to credit cycles. It's really value derived from data that's unique. And you have that double advantage. Excellent data that's proprietary and smart analysis yields value.
All right, perfect. I think that's all we have time for. So I guess the consensus, it's not a bubble, will be here next year as well.
We will.
Thank you to the panel, and thanks again for listening.
Thank you so much. Thanks.